Hey everyone, welcome to my very first episode of Mood Prep Musings. So when I first started this podcast, the idea was to have my podcast 5 to 10 minutes, Monday to Friday, which I will continue to do, which I'm very much enjoying. However, what I've noticed is that when I get to catch up with people like Julian from StrongFit, who this podcast is with, it was difficult to keep our conversations to 5 to 10 minutes. And so what I have decided to do is open up a segment called Mood Prep Musings, which is what this is. And it's effectively anywhere from like 30 minutes to an hour and a half worth of conversation that I have with anyone that I really enjoy talking with, communicating with, learning from, interviewing, and then sharing it with you guys. So when I was talking to Julian, I realized that we weren't going to get in a 5 to 10 minute podcast. So I simply just pressed record and it just started from there. So you're about to jump into the podcast where Julian is talking about how I do believe it's William Reich, the psychologist, is figuring out how to communicate better with schizophrenics, and then how that applies to training and stuff later on. You'll find out that the best thing about Julian is that his approach to training isn't just his physical component, it actually goes even through the nervous system and psychological component as well. So give it a good 60 to 90 seconds to sort of catch up to where we're at, and then from there I'm sure you'll understand all the musings from there on in. So welcome to the very first episode. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did, and Julian, I hope you enjoyed it as well. But yeah, I look forward to doing more of these in the future, and enjoy.
He's studying a lot of schizophrenic, and you can tell how unjudgmental he is. On the contrary, he's like, can you talk their language? Not like, ooh, they're crazy. I mean, you have to remember also, he is 1910 to 1940. Can you imagine? That's at the time where schizophrenic were being lobotomized.
Well,
right?
Google was in books then.
Yeah. Didn't even have the dial on the phone.
Yeah.
But they were being lobotomized. And here's someone who came and said, no, we have to talk their language. They're not crazy. That's not enough.
Yeah.
They have to, in their own reality, they have to be right.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is it they're right about? And let's go from there. So that means they have an improper way of reacting to the truth. Maybe they're visualizing the truth incorrectly, but the truth is still there for them. Mm. So let's see. And then he went at it trying to speak schizophrenic language, understanding where it comes from.
Mm.
Where at the time was psychiatry was only description.
Yeah.
Never anything past description. That's a medical world for you. The second they don't know, they stick with the description, and
yep,
they refuse to go past it. That's what you see on the anatomical chart. People don't understand movement, so all they do is give names to muscle. Like, that actually makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, the pec has a name. I'm like, awesome. That doesn't mean you can bench press, dude.
Yeah.
You knowing the name of the pectoral major and minor does not make you bench press correctly. I know that's a weird idea, but you can't learn to swim on a table.
It's not weird, right? It's not weird because you can write down morals and be an asshole, right?
You know what you can do? You can put those quotes on Facebook that look very good
be
an asshole.
That does not
stop you from being an asshole.
I've been one of them before.
You put a very inspiring quote on Facebook and you don't do any of it, and you're still a dick.
Especially when you then put your name afterwards. You're like,
that wasn't it wasn't you. Socrates, you asshole.
You can't miss an apostrophe and claim it yours. That's all this funny thing. It was just like a female helpline, right?
Yeah.
Helpline. And it was like, oh, I've had a crisis. And then the person on the end of the hotline goes, have you posted an inspirational quote and just said this? I mean, like, people, not just females, people do that sort of stuff. And like, I get it.
But yeah.
Because, and social media is an interesting conversation, considering that this is where I've taken it now, apparently. Now that we got fucking microphones and that. But it's like, people will say, is social media good or bad? It's like, it's neither. That's like saying, is religion good or bad? It's like, well, it's neither.
No, but we don't know how to deal with it yet.
No, well, it's a magnifying glass.
And then this is that generation that will be sacrificed until we figure out how to deal with it.
Mm.
Right now, we just don't know what to do with it. That's all. So we're playing the game. We're playing and we're finding out that sometimes you not the best result, but okay, well, let's play some more.
Well, we're talking about a generation that's grown up for one of the first times ever without the tribe, right? And tribe's a pretty cliche word, but what I'm talking about is that, like, 100 years ago, a community brought up a child, right?
Yeah,
now what we do is we go, the kids go here, the adults go here, and then the grandparents go here. It's like the newborns are here, this is where all the workers and the, hunters and collectors, and then the elders are over here. We segmented, and we're like, oh, that won't do any damage.
Yeah, exactly. But to me, what they don't see with the internet is, like, to me, there were two revolutions in the human history. The first one was the Gutenberg Press. People don't realize that the Gutenberg Press, what it did, because at the time, the only time you had books, right? That means they were copied by priests.
Yeah.
they were copied and translated by priests. Priests were the only people who knew how to write.
Mm.
So every book had to go through the Catholic Church to be printed. And so imagine that stuff. And the Gutenberg Press allowed for the basically the drop of the entire control of the church on knowledge. What the church didn't understand that. You know that this the church is the one that paid for the Gutenberg Press. That's what the first book ever printed was a Bible.
Right.
Because the Catholic Church, thinking it could disseminate Bibles more, actually funded Gutenberg in creating the press. But they didn't know they were giving up that entire control. They did that to themselves, which I find awesome, by the way. But the second revolution, if not more important, is the internet. Because books gave you information, not knowledge.
Mm.
With the internet, what you have now is you have the capacity to actually go at the author and ask, what do you mean?
Mm.
So now you can get knowledge out of it and not just information.
Yeah.
And so this will be, to me, the greatest revolution in mankind.
So
will
far,
be the
yeah.
internet. So growing pains, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And social media is one of them, right?
Which
means we're able to say stuff to people we don't know. And yes, okay, we have to learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
There's a freedom in it that is destructive.
Sometimes. Well, how can it be positive or negative? It's a map, not the territory, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, we do that all the time. The good and bad is like what we call, we do that from pain, from training and everything. Good and bad is a very much opinion-based. It's not, we're just using it to not the best, you know, the best goal sometimes, but it doesn't work like that. To me, this will be the greatest. It's going to take a little bit of time because people forget. Shit takes time, right? We've been there for a while. It will be the greatest revolution in mankind history because it gives us access to past information. It gives us access to knowledge. The internet is not just for porn. There's actually stuff outside of
there's
that.
There's cats.
Kittens, let's be honest.
Yeah, kittens. Yeah, cat videos. All types of cat videos. So,
every time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's interesting, right? So, look, if the press being one, the internet being two.
I believe so.
Now, the question is, what's three, right? Now, the reason why I say that is because if we go back to what was the year where the press came out?
Oh, yeah, like, we're talking 600 years,
right? So let's just say hypothetically 1400.
Yeah.
Now somebody says there, we'll be able to pass moving images through the air. Like then it'll be like you're crazy.
Yeah.
So what is crazy witchcraft today that'll be relative in 200 years?
And it's speeding up too.
Yeah.
You can tell, right?
Yeah.
Like you see the progress we made in the last 300 and then the last 200, the last 100 years.
Exponential.
It's speeding up exponentially.
Yeah.
So but imagine now that we have the knowledge from all those people, like stuff that's what people don't understand at social media. Look, even on training, look at the impact on powerlifting, CrossFit and stuff like that. Look at how much powerlifting has progressed in the last 5 to 10 years. Look at strongmen, look at CrossFit. Mm. Why? Because instead of meeting that person once a year at the Worlds, you see him train every day. That put a fire under your ass.
Mm.
And now you have the 1,000-pound deadlift by Andy Bolton was seen as the craziest shit ever, right? Back then, look how long it took for them to go to 900 to 1,000. And now you got 8-10 people doing 1,000, all the strongmen, because the fucking social media is forcing
mile.
Them to go back to the
we're doing the 4-minute mile all over again.
But you needed La Fontaine to, you needed to see to go, oh, I can do that.
Mm.
But social media allows you to see it every day and you go like, fuck me, okay, I gotta go back to the gym. It's speeding up all that stuff. Yes, yeah, sometimes there is negative aspect, but like everything else in life, so that has a tremendous impact on so much. Like you can see all the Me Too movement, like all those movements basically that allowed to have certain people out there that would never have a voice otherwise. There's that idea that it's social media is destructive is ridiculous. Some parts of it, obviously, but this will be the greatest revolution of mankind.
Right?
Yeah, well, always.
That's the other thing.
Always, man. Look, even the nervous system, there's certain things that feel good or bad, but neither are good or bad.
Yeah.
Anxiety is not bad.
No.
Per se, it doesn't feel great, but it's just a way for you to spend an energy that you didn't spend into action.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come back toward you. Now you have to spend it at anxiety. It's basically a little bit what depression is. You are just spending that energy that you were supposed to spend into socialization and then all that side. You can't. You're going to spend it somewhere else.
Mm.
That doesn't make it bad. That just makes it feel bad. But in itself, you're just spending the energy. If you can look at it from anxiety for what it is, which is an expenditure of energy in the sympathetic nervous system, you can understand that it's normal to be anxious. You're not weak. You're not being a wuss. It's nothing wrong with you. You just didn't spend the energy into action. Now you're going to have to deal with it by spending it into anxiety.
Well, there's a conversation. Okay. Yeah, it is okay. That's the thing.
It's
right?
Okay.
It's
normal.
Understanding, though,
it's human. Yeah.
You don't have anxiety. You're doing anxiety.
You're doing anxiety. You're spending the energy. It's necessary. It's not even necessary. You cannot not do it.
Yeah.
So if something cannot be not done, how can it be bad?
Well, and it's called metastating, right? So it's like you get anxious about being anxious, which makes you now, more anxious.
Exactly, because so now you're criticizing yourself, and now it feels bad.
Yeah. Now
if you get anxiety for what it is, which is just basically energy being spent, maybe you could turn it into something positive.
Yeah.
It makes you think more. It makes you look at your deal with your life or whatever. It's you thinking you're worse, that you're weak, and then you start piling on the negativity that makes it feel bad. Fuck. You're doing it to yourself. How can it be bad if it's a function? It's like saying peeing is bad.
Yeah.
How can it be bad if it's a function of your human body? There is no bad in the human body function. There is a function.
It's also understanding that, it's a function, right? Because it's not an identity.
Yeah, it's like a function.
Saying that you are the air conditioning if you're just a car.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a
it's something it does. Yeah, it's something it does. I mean, it's like, people having like weird relationship with being able to pierce. I'm like, dude, it's a function.
Yeah.
It's like sweating. Sweating is not good or bad. It's something you do. Mm. You need, you do, don't.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's sort of like the... Speaking to people, they go, how can I feel worse, feel less bad emotion? It's like, you don't. You stop calling it bad emotion because that feeling that you think is bad, you used to tell your ancestors that this is not a good place, you should leave before you get attacked.
Thank God we have it. And you'd be dead without it.
Yeah, exactly right. And so it's sort of like things that you once felt anxious about, you no longer feel anxious about later on because you become familiar with it and you've worked through that.
And because the thing is that is the acting on it.
Tiny bit at a time, right? We talked about the peanuts analogy and stuff before. You have to do the tiny fucking little bit at a time, and that little tiny encroaching, that's how all good and bad things happen, right? If you read the book Ordinary Men, which I haven't read in its totality as of yet, but it talks about how the Nazi prison guards became who they were. They're ordinary men.
Yeah,
but
how they started as...
Yeah. How do we start this out? Let's frame it. Okay, we're going to do some pretty heinous things. You're welcome to leave now, otherwise you're going to be in. It's like, well, I can't leave my men. I can't leave them behind, so I'm going to stick around.
No, and plus, you start by... No, but just open... because that was the justification. I didn't gas them. I just opened the door.
Yeah, that's how it starts.
And that's how you can do anything.
Yep, put them on the train.
No, just tell them... Yeah, just put them on the train. You're not responsible for anything. That's a factory mentality, because I see coaches do that all the time.
Yeah.
Not gassing Jews. Just the idea of maybe not that... They're not that bad. Just put them on a train. Don't worry what happens after. You know, it's the guy making the steering wheel in the factory. He has no clue if the car is going to run or not, and it doesn't matter to him.
Yeah,
I did my steering wheel. I did my job.
Mm.
That's it.
Mm.
But that's Western. I think that's what Industrial Revolution did to us.
Yeah.
It put us into that idea that the craftsmanship is doing one part, whether the car is running or not.
Yeah.
And that's extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what revolution took away. The humanity took away from us was to tell us that it was okay to be a craftsman toward making a steering wheel. And then your job was to do that the best you could without having the responsibility of knowing if the car runs or not.
Yeah.
And that's how you put...
It's disconnecting.
And that's how you put Jews...
dehumanizing.
That's how you put Jews in camps by saying, just put them on the train. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You're not responsible for anything. All you did was put people in a train. How bad can you be?
Yeah.
And that's then you can justify anything.
Yeah, and that turns into... And it does turn into this. It turns into shooting a pregnant woman. That's what it turned into, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, that's a really extreme, example. But that shit actually happened. And that is what can happen on a smaller level within the facilities. With, like, I just wrote the program. It's like, you don't have a duty of care. You have a duty of meaning, right? You have a duty of meaning.
Exactly.
Is that everything you do actually matters. Every rock that lands in the water is gonna make a ripple. You don't just, this is no.
Yeah, because that's not what they come to see you for. I had that guy saying, like, wait, but you see that I'm on nutrition. I give someone a plan and everything and they're too lazy to follow it. And I'm like, are they?
Yeah.
Is that really what the problem is? They're too lazy. You don't think there's anything past it. And by the way, if you did not explain to them the purpose and the good that can come out of your plan, then you didn't do your fucking job, now did you?
Yeah, but you can't also fix behavioral issues with technical solutions.
Basically you're just describing what a diet should look like.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, description is not fixing. There's a difference between describing a problem and fixing a problem. They didn't come to you to describe the problem, they come to you to fix it.
Yeah.
You go to a doctor or whatever and you say my back hurts, he does $1,000 images and stuff like that. He comes back and you go, I know what the problem is. Your back hurts.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, thank you, doctor. There's $1,000.
Yeah.
That's what you see all the time. Yeah. I'm like, that's not what I came to see you for.
Yeah.
You can explain to me my back hurts. I know, that's why I came here.
Yeah.
In the first place, what I need is to know how to fix it.
Yeah.
That's what I see a lot of, a lot of coaching out there, that the problem is that it's a description of what the job is instead of actually doing the job.
Mm.
which is, I don't care that you explain to me what a carb and a fat is, you're going to have to go into the root of the issue of why they eat a certain way and how come they can't stick with it, and can we do this over time, and can you talk to the person, please? Can we go back to a human side where you actually talk to the person in front of you? It is not a robot.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that's, so I mean, you go into like chaos and order, right? But I've had clients, and this is like, with their permission, you can get to deep stuff if you've done enough of the right conversations, right? And it's also understanding language. And I've had clients that are like, they kept themselves overweight. A female kept herself overweight because she wanted to lose weight consciously.
Yeah.
Subconsciously, the story is, if I lose weight and become more attractive to a male, I'll get beaten like my last relationship. Go write a diet for that. You can't. Well, how do I have that conversation? Well, you can, but it's a lot of trust. It's a lot of rapport.
And it takes a lot of time. That's all. It's a lot of time. It's not an easy thing. Relationship, by the way. You're talking about getting deep with
me. Yeah.
No, you're talking about dark stuff and everything. Yeah. Like, or maybe she was, another one might be, maybe she was raped, therefore being more attractive, being feeling the sexual energy from male, and she doesn't want that because it reminds me of the rape. Yeah, that's going to be a fucking hard conversation, but guess what? She'll never lose weight otherwise.
Yeah.
Is it your job to go that deep? You go as far as you want.
Yeah, you go as far as your insurance allows you. Like that's
okay. So from a business perspective, but even from a human side, you go like, because someone asked me about that. Say, wait, but what if they want to face it? Then don't face it. It's not your job to make them face it. It's up to them to see. It's again, we're going back to relationship. It's you go as far as you want to go into this. So same thing with coaching and mentoring program. Like because I have calls with my guys, but I'm going to do a special call on the side that relates to psychology or certain things like physical armoring. I'm like, you don't have to do it. This is not part of movement per se. Is it part of movement? Of course, but it's not. I understand if you don't want to go there. Yeah, that's not what you signed up for originally. You go as far as you want. It's Fight Club. You decide your own level of involvement.
Yeah.
This is how I see it.
Yeah.
So you want to be a factory worker that delivers a nice steering wheel? You go do it. That is not what I think. Okay, let me rephrase. That is not what I will do.
Yes.
I think my responsibility goes way further. So me, I'm not going to stop at the steering wheel. I want to make sure the car is moving. So I'll go as deep as I can into psychology, and we'll have conversation with clients where for an hour, they'll want to commit suicide. I'll be on the phone. Let's talk.
Yeah. And the question, like, this is what I found a lot from other coaches as well. Like, when do I know enough to then teach or give content? It's like, okay, you never know enough, but you are enough to do so.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree.
So that's a really big difference of going, this is what I know to be true.
Yeah.
This is my experiences of learning. And this is allowing us to actually share content that we can all build a better platform from. And that's genuine and that's beautiful. When we lose
it's a
that.
Tribe. Yeah, yes. It's a human side. It's a tribal aspect. Like, this is what the healer was on the tribe. He was a dude. He was always older because he had more experience. He dealt with shit. And guess what? You're not going to get good until you deal with it. Right? So I hope if you're 22 and you're just starting your career, you're not going to have the conversation with an overweight lady who, unfortunately, is afraid of getting beat up. That's a hard conversation to have because you have no experience.
Well, you don't.
But eventually... No, you don't. It's not your job to go get it, by the way. It is up to her to decide whether she wants to talk to you. Your job is, can you create the level of trust that she'll feel comfortable enough to tell you about it? And then maybe somewhere make progress toward it.
Yeah.
So can you be a human being?
Yeah. And do you know what to do once that door is open?
Okay, so now you're going to have to... Now this mastership of your craft,
which
requires 10,000 passionate... Not just 10,000 hours, 10,000 passionate hours.
Mm.
So you're going to have to... Yeah, you're going to have to go read psychology. You're going to have to get better at your craft. Mm. But you can't get better at it if you think the craft is making a steering wheel. That's all you ever do then.
Mm.
You're going to get really good at a steering wheel and that's it. And whether the car runs or not is not your problem. Okay, if that's what you want, go. But that's not what I think the job is.
So Jordan Peterson has a chapter in his book, do what is meaningful, not what is expedient, right?
Very true.
Yeah. And so a lot of the times, and I pondered this a lot before, it's like people would go, what is the meaning of life? And this is, I understand the deepness of this kind of conversation, but we're going to bring it to a pretty obvious level. It's like, well, don't ask that question. It's like, what meaning can I give my life? Right? Because we get to choose that. Right.
Yeah. What are you doing with it?
Yeah.
Like we're having the conversation, and while we're having the conversation, most people like pondering about it basically use that as an excuse not to actually do anything.
Mm.
At some point, I think the correct life is the one where if you have a correct life, I think this is the moment where you don't ask yourself what is the meaning of life anymore because you're living it.
That's exactly right.
If you're living it, you're not going to ask yourself.
Yeah.
I can tell you, Mac, this is something that I pondered when I was 18. Pounded my head against the wall for so many years, but now that I have the life that I wanted, this is not a question that comes around anymore.
No,
I have my daughter, I have the stuff, I know exactly what I'm doing, I figure, and I found out that it's not the meaning is it's what I'm doing because I'm doing it.
Yeah.
The second I started doing it, the action came about. That energy was spent into the action. I think the energy you're spending in that question is the energy you're not spending in building your life.
Yes. Yeah.
Once you build your life, a lot of those questions are being answered through action.
Well, it's about building yourself.
Yeah, right. It's action-based. Again, it's like anxiety coming back. I think that question is a form of anxiety because you didn't put any of the energy into action, so it comes back at you in anxiety, and here comes the question has been built as energy coming back because you do not spend it into action.
Well, is somebody asking that question to actually find out the answer? That's the other thing, right?
Yeah.
Some people ask a question for the sake of having a rhetorical question.
Yes.
But it's like, no, are you actually looking for the answer? Because
that's all life, in actual, not in the philosophical where you're never going to have to act on it.
Are you
asking that question in something you're going to act upon?
Yeah.
Because if you're not going to act upon it, why are we talking? Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You'll find some answers. You might not like all of them, but you'll find some. Are you going to act on it or not?
Yeah.
Are you going to play the games necessary to, and fail 4 million times so you can find the answer? That's the thing too, is people are, they ask you those questions. I find very few that are willing to play the games 2 million times and lose 2 million times to find the answer. Then the answer never matters that much to you anyway.
Yeah, exactly right.
Can you go out there and try 2 million stuff and fail?
Mm-hmm.
How many fails are you willing to have to get the answer? For a lot of people, not many.
Yeah. Well, that's all life is, right? Life's just questions. In the sense of when you get up, your brain will continually ask questions. Yep. And if this, I go back, I said before about consciously wiring your subconscious.
Yeah.
It's like that's your ability to ask better questions of yourself. Because your brain works like Google. You type something something will come up.
Something will come up. Yeah. It's just better and better and better and better and learn to play the game as you go. Yep. That's the alpha zero stuff. You know what I mean?
People, that's problems. Problems are just questions.
Yeah.
That's all problems are. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, and you solve them by asking the right questions. Yeah. So that's the key. That's where the whole burn the questions was coming about. It's just, can you just take all the bad ones out of the way and get to the correct question every time? If you do that, that's where your problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is the solution of a problem is in the correct question.
Yeah.
If you can ask the question correctly, usually there's your solution right there.
Yeah.
So that's what the game is. Basically, it's burning the bad ones.
Yeah. What's the next question, ones. Right?
Yeah. That's exactly it. The right one, the good question.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And burn all the bad ones because there's always 1,000 questions going through, right? But as you get better, you start to understand, you get a feel for the next question, the next correct questions, and then you can start moving forward. Mm. How long does it take? As long as it takes. But imagine how many games you need to play to become efficient at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How long does it take?
As long as it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not in our control. That's not.
Yeah, when you succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how long will it take for you to stop?
Yeah.
To quit?
Yeah.
That's a better question.
That's a better, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much of yourself are you going to put into this? And exactly.
Yeah. How long will it take? Well, how long will it take for you to quit?
Yeah.
Because it's one more than that.
Yeah, exactly. There's one after that. Yeah. The one after that is usually the answer. Yeah. Yeah. Because you'll have to shed all that stuff and everything. Because you get that even in the fitness world, right? You get those questions all the time. How long before I'm like that? But that's just to show that the society gives you those 6 week stuff, always gives you that timeline. I find the two biggest problems with people is timeline and definition of success are their two biggest problems in life.
So as a coach or a trainer, whatever you want to call yourself, honestly, and it's like your main role, one of your main roles is to manage expectations.
Yeah,
that's actually one of your main roles.
I agree completely. Right? It's such a hard thing.
Yeah.
The timeline of success is a problem and what success is.
Mm.
I find most people don't have a programming that fits their true goal.
No, because they also aren't honest about their true goal because they don't know how to be.
Yeah.
Right? And this is like going once again in those, but this is what I've found so much more fascinating than getting athletes to the games. I mean, that's not me, and I use that as an example, but I understand that and I respect that, right? I respect art for what it is.
But it's,
for sure. But for me, it's like, you want to lose weight. Okay, why?
Yes,
what will you have when you lose? You'll have freedom. You won't be liked more. That's not, you think it is, but that's called conditional.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not healthy. What you want is freedom. And I learned this, my videographer, he passed away October 2016. Okay.
Yeah.
And I've known him since I was 14. And he, gentle soul, like just one of those amazing people that you like.
Yeah.
If it can happen to him.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And so, at his funeral, I learned two things. Right. I learned one major thing, but it was important and it was honest across the board. And what that was is that only in life, two things really, really matter. Really, I mean, we can pull this apart, but I'm coming back to this unless there's something better, honestly. And that is the memories you make and how you contribute. That's it. Everything else is just categories of that. Because
do you see City Fletcher? Like that video we did, because right now it's not going well.
Yeah.
And you see a video, he's like, at the end, he's like, how many lives did I touch? That's the only thing that matters at the end.
Absolutely.
And that's what I discovered, because in the last 2 years we made changes, is that it's just the only reward. To me, the only reward I got was that, is how many lives did I touch.
Yeah.
At the end, that's it.
Well, that's exactly right. And the reason why, right? If people don't, they're like, oh, but I'm like, no one gives a fuck what you earn. No one cares about your couch. No one cares about Call of Duty. No one cares about that stuff, man. Right? Yeah, because you go to a funeral and they're going to say, my memory of X person is this. And he always, or she always, made time for this. Yeah. And that's all that mattered. And because that's how you build a community that trusts each other. By building memories together and by contributing, right? And not concerning about something coming back in return. People always talk about what you attract. It's like, stop being so fucking selfish. Think about what you project.
Yeah, exactly. Right? How did you affect the people? Yeah.
If you're talking about attraction, you're talking about what you receive.
That's when my friend Chris Moore died. Because, you know, he died from Babel Shrug.
Mm.
He died, he was 36. So he just was at home. He put the babies the two kids to bed, 2 and 5. Went into his room. Boom. Fell down and his wife found him dead, basically. But so we were at the funeral and everything. And what everybody talked about is the effect on their life.
Mm.
Didn't talk about his life. He talked about what he did for them.
Yes.
And that's how you'll be remembered.
Yeah.
The impact on their life.
Yeah.
Your life, nobody gives a shit. It's the impact that you had that changed them for the better.
Yeah. And this is why it's so important to actually dial down and to understand what it is our goal. Like, really, at the core of it. Otherwise, the superficial level will take us on a route that when we're successful there, we're actually a failure.
Yeah, and that's actually the worst thing you can do to yourself, because let's say you have that wrong idea why you want to lose weight. You lose the weight, you get there, and you feel even worse than when you started, because losing the weight did not give you that feeling you were looking for.
Yeah.
So now you're more lost than before. Yeah. Now you lost the weight, you look great, and you still feel hollow inside, and that's the worst thing you can do.
And what's worse is that I'm meant to feel, right? Now I'm shooting on myself about something else. Yeah. I'm meant to feel like this, so I'm going to post on social media how good... But it's like, no.
That's not true.
Like, don't focus on being successful. Like, focus on being honest. Right?
Yeah. Because what you're trying to be successful for in the first place is that feeling you're looking for. But that's not what you're getting. That's why you're posting about it so much, by the way. But once you get to that spot and you realize that's not what you were looking for, now you sacrifice all that stuff, because there's a lot of sacrifices that come into. Mm. You punish yourself, because that usually comes out of hate, not out of love. To get into that place where you don't feel that reward that you were looking for, that's a bad place to be, man.
So punishment is slave energy. Yep. Right. So in a codependent pattern, that's losing the codependency. Mm-hmm. The victim aggressor rescuer role, right? And so that's where this is another... I think it's an issue worth talking about in the industry, is that a lot of the times...
Fitness coming from hate,
Yeah, and that's right. But also from sadistic...
Yeah.
Like, once initially a rescuer, but turned to an aggressor, right? And this is where somebody walks into a gym and they're like, I've always been overweight. Can you help me lose weight? The actual answer is probably no. And I'll explain that in a minute. But the person goes, yes, because I can rescue you.
Yeah.
But then they become the aggressor to that concept. Person.
Yeah.
But the person that says, I've always been overweight, can you help me? It's like, well, always means forever. Yeah. Always means forever, which means you see it in your past and you see it in your future.
That you don't think it capable of. Yeah.
Yeah, so I can help you lose weight, and guess what's going to happen afterwards?
Yeah.
Do what is meaningful, not what is expedient.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what. But I think that's what that first hour, honestly, to me, the first hour when I talk to someone because they say, can you fix my back or whatever, the first hour is like, okay, definition of success.
Mm. Yeah, what's yours? As a general rule, what is yours? I'm interested.
Me is that, is impacting life. To me, like the... Okay, so I'll tell you exactly what it is. I had a... I'll give you a practical example. I had a lady. She was early CrossFit OG, right? And her back was fucked up. Like, you're talking 7 millimeters L5, 7 millimeters L4, 3 millimeters S1. So, like, could not basically air die and running. Right, could not squat. I made her squat a 60-pound sandbag. She went down 5 centimeters, started crying. I was like, all right, so we have a problem then. Fast forward 6 months, and there was that one workout where she pushed, really pushed, right? I don't know if you ever dealt with people that are in pain constantly, but there's a veil in their eyes.
Mm.
You can tell it took something away from their soul, from their humanity. They lost something. And that workout, she looked at me with a smile on her face, and there was a sparkle in her eyes where her soul came back.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was herself again, because she had defined herself through training an entire life. And she found herself again in that moment where she could push finally, without going through the pain, without having the pain breaking her soul like it was. That moment, that look that she gave me, that's what I do it for. Mm-hmm. That's the greatest success I've ever had, was that moment.
Beautiful.
She looked at me, and that smile made me feel like I almost cried that day. Because she was not almost had tears of joy, but me, I almost cried just looking at her, because there was something back in the eyes that just wasn't there before. The first day I saw her, she was so down. Like, you could tell she had lost part of her, who she was. And she was ready to give up too. I was the last person that she was going to see before giving up.
Yeah.
Like, she saw the snake oil guy. Every single person, I'm always the last one to come see this. I'm not sure it's good for my ego, by the way.
Snake oil guy.
Yeah, I guess I am, because I'm after the snake oil guy.
Maybe you're the snake guy.
I'm the after the snake oil guy. So, like, I'm literally that low on the list. But you could tell she was ready to quit. Like, there was a soul being crushed there, basically. And to see that day, that light in her eyes, I was like, that's what I mean. That moment, that's when I still remember it. You know, like, they always tell you, like, what's surprising in those life death moments when you feel you're gonna die, is you remember not so much how you almost died, but as the feeling, right? They say technically you're not supposed to remember that feeling, and yet you can. I can exactly remember the feeling of that moment when she looked at me. I can remember her eyes as she looked at me, and that feeling right there. It's one of those defining moments. I was like, that's what I do. That was a greatest success. That was a cool moment. Like, in any one of those, it's, you can't put it on Facebook. You can't.
No.
It's just something I saw, that I felt, and I was like, that's it.
Well, it's also not meant for out there. It's meant for in here.
It was right? For me.
In saying that. Yeah.
And it was one human being to the next. You know what it was? It's, you did good.
It was a thank you.
I saw that light in her eyes, and inside I was like, I did good. That was it. Like, inside I was like, I did good. That's it. That's my definition of success. It doesn't go past that. I just, if I do good, I'm cool.
Which is like, goodbye whose standards, right? Which comes back down to being able to have your own standards on it.
But that's the thing, is can you truly decide what success is for you? Like, no, so I can tell you, because that feeling, I can tell you exactly what it is. Is me, it's very, very precise. It was that. It was that moment where I took pain away.
Yeah.
So that pain that was like soul crushing, literally soul splitting, I would say, I took that pain away.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah, it's end unnecessary suffering.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
But that's my, by the way, I'm not saying people should do that. I'm saying this is my definition, right? But can you really that precisely define what your success is? You'd be surprised when you really spend that first hour asking people, what do you want? How many can actually tell you?
Mm-hmm.
Very few. It's like, I had coaches where I'm like, what do you want? What do you want? But not like, in my life. No. Like, what are you going to work toward in your life? What do you want your life to be? Like, that actually going to work toward? Because to do what I do, that means reading everything on the psychology, like all the stuff and teaching it, and then crushing my nervous system to see how it feels like, because you're going to have to go there as well, right? It's, you have, I have to be able to speak the language of the people that I see. So when they're in pain, I need to understand why. So God knows I fucked up in the past, so I know what it's like to hurt yourself. But you have to, there's so much that has to be done to be able to talk people's language in their pain, in their anxiety, and all that stuff. Can you understand that? Because those are the actions you're going to have to take to be able to help people. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to play 2 million games and lose 2 million games to be able to understand people's language so you can help them? So you better have a very, very clear definition of success if it means playing and losing 2 million games to get good at it.
Well, I mean, like, it's not to put it in a cliche sense, but everybody wants to win, but nobody wants to lose.
Yeah.
Therefore, nobody wants to win.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Because how are you meant to know what winning feels like if you don't know what losing feels like?
And yeah, and because, and you know, like, the penis, you're going to get good at it very slowly by basically finding every single way, like Edison, with finding 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb. That's the thing, is, are you willing to find 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb? And that's, so it's 1,000 to 1, that's probably a low ratio. It's probably 1,000,000 to 1. Like, you're gonna have to lose so many times just to get that one thing's right, and then again. It's a process like that. It's about the process, the time. To be able to do that, you're gonna have to have an extremely precise vision of what success is to you. The best thing you can do for yourself is why do you want to lose weight? Truly.
Yep.
Go find it. And so, to me, when I have people at first hour, is actually that. It's okay, let's talk, but let's really talk.
Yeah.
Let's not talk snatch and all that bullshit. It's like, why are we doing this? Because otherwise, it's useless. So, why are we doing this? Just tell me why. But you're going to have to give me, because you can always tell bullshit when it comes your way, right? Especially with bigger ladies that need to lose weight, there's so much baggage usually that comes behind that.
Well, bigger anyone, right? Like, for men, there's a lot of shame that goes with that.
Yes. Right? Yeah, body dysmorphia is actually, body dysmorphia is actually vastly more common in men than people think. But they won't talk about it. That'll take longer.
Yeah.
But the first conversation, the first hour should be on that. It's, can we find out what you truly want? Because then I can help you.
And here's the other thing, and science backs this up. Like, the coach, a way to do that is to be a little bit vulnerable yourself. Right? Yes. Just a little bit, because that opens up the door. But if you're asking somebody to be vulnerable and you're not giving anything, there's no trust there.
Yeah, and then they'll feel you're judging them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the thing, is you can't be judgmental. Can you speak their language? Mm. And so they, again, it's a relationship. Are you willing to go that deep with someone, right? To talk about stuff that are, is it comfortable? Hell no. Is it more work? Fuck yeah. Is it, it's more work, it's less comfortable, it's not snatching, it's not easy.
It's less work in the long run, though. That's the thing.
Right? But then it's real work in the long run, too, because now you're, and by the way, now you can actually help that person.
Yeah.
And because if you go to the deep root issue, then you can actually help them.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing, is it's like, okay, we can have a conversation about diet and I can tell you what I think you should be eating, right? Yeah. We can do that. But if we don't have this conversation over here, which is kind of a little bit embarrassing or a little bit something, then what's going to happen is I know we're going to have this conversation again.
Yes.
Right. And so I want to avoid having the same conversation. And
exactly.
What is it you want to talk about exactly, right? I can give you the order, but unfortunately, your problem is the chaos.
Yeah, I can describe what you should eat, or I can actually help you fix a problem. Yeah, and exactly. If you fix a problem, usually if you do it well, you fix it once.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to describe, you can describe the same thing 1,000 times, because if you come back exactly the same way, you can describe it again. Mm-hmm. So same thing as last time. I can get really good at describing problems and never fixing them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you see with food the most.
Mm-hmm.
Where people get really good at the scientific stuff and that, and with people that will do it for 3 weeks, quit, 6 weeks, whatever, quit, come back to it 3 months later, and you can make a lifetime of money out of this,
mm-hmm.
and never fix a problem.
Oh, man, look, here's my belief in the fitness scene, and this is something that I've done, this is the only thing I've done for the last, mm-hmm. I'm 29, 14 years, all I've done. But I do thoroughly believe, as a whole, right, the industry, the fitness industry, creates long-term psychological issues, provides people with short-term physical solutions to create repeat customers, right? Now, we're not all in that. In fact, usually the renegades, you know, inverted commas, that are trying to stop that. They're trying to shift the way that is. And I think
it's moving.
Yeah, absolutely it is. But the problem is that, like, that all comes from education. That all comes from free content that allows people to go, here's our thoughts, here's our experiences. Take from it what you will, make up your own mind, but just keep going.
Long-term psychological damage is probably what worries me the most in the fitness industry. Like, we are pushing, like, for example, like the competitive CrossFit right now, because I got a bunch of games athletes, and they're not the one who worries me the most. What worries me the most is the guy at regionals who's never going to make it to the games, and yet sacrifices relationships, family, job, career, and everything.
Morals
to do stuff where you go like, what is it you're trying to do? I'm starting to see, so CrossFit has changed the way we train women forever.
Yeah.
Right? He has done, you look in the States, the entire generation of women, I want to get jacked, more muscle and everything. Something you never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I'd be able to hear women coming saying, I want more muscle. I mean, so CrossFit has changed that. But it's starting to create some kind of a weird compulsion toward punishing yourself in training in order to get that result at the end at regionals or at the game, where they're willing to literally punish themselves for so long in order to get the release at the end. That sounds like a sadomasochistic behavior.
Yes.
They're creating a new compulsion. Like, so they had food compulsion, they had different, like you've seen those women doing cardio for 2 hours. I don't want CrossFit to create a new compulsion for women to hurt themselves with.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's what worries me, is that. It's the long-term psychological damage of making people using their own hatred in order to get progress.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a dark place to be in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, you can't use that as a fuel. Hatred is not a good fuel.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you can create more and more. It's very easy to hate yourself. Yeah. You can create a lot of fuel like that, but they're starting to, it's that weird relationship where they start to basically use anxiety to train more, which creates more anxiety, which that way they can train more. That's a compulsion. That's a very compulsive behavior that can lead you to a very dark place.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
It is extremely dangerous. I mean, like, you see it with everyone. I mean, I have been stuck in spaces of like, oh, I need to train because I'm meant to uphold a particular identity.
Yeah.
And if I don't uphold that identity, then I'm not the person who I'm meant to. Yeah,
exactly.
And so on and so forth. And it took me a long time to go, no one gives a shit.
Yes.
Right? No one actually fucking cares what I live.
Exactly.
No one actually cares.
No one cares. You know what? They'll forget you next year. No one cares.
Dude, my
that's the thing. No one cares.
Fact when I'm have my ass handed to me, when I'm in a workout, just like, you know, I pulled back from a lot of conditioning and probably brought it back in the last sort of 6 to 9 months just because I want to enjoy it. That was like, fuck it, I got to enjoy this shit.
I had to do that.
And like, there's workouts that have just had my ass handed to me. And there's clients that are finishing before me and all sorts of bits and pieces, right? Scaled this or whatever, doesn't matter, right? Regardless, that's not even a point.
Yeah, you think I can do burpees?
Yeah, right? Yeah, I think I want it? No. Yeah, no. I'm pretty close to the ground, so yeah, I'm good. Yeah. It's getting back up. But in that circumstance, they enjoy the fact that I'm willing to go through the same suffering. Now, suffering and self-hatred are two different things.
Yes. No, but like, a hard workout is going to suffer. Yeah. There's no question there.
Yeah. And suffering, growing up, I used to think suffering was what the weak did. Yeah. Now that I got older, I realize it's what the weak avoid.
Yeah.
And to put ourselves through some sort of suffering on the other side of that is growth. And I'm not saying the sense of suffering like sitting in a dark room and feeling sorry about yourself. That's a whole other conversation. It's something else. I'm talking about looking at, it could be a workout, looking at a book, looking at a conversation, walking up to a female that's just that little tiny bit like, oh, yep. On the other side of that, right?
5% slay past your comfort zone.
Slay your fucking dragon.
Yeah.
Right? That's the whole metaphorical reason. That's why the story is there's gold on the other side of the dragon.
Exactly.
The treasure is on the other side. Or the girl,
whatever. Yeah. But you're going to have to go through the dragon first.
And then you realize that the dragon was you the whole time. Yeah. Right? And it's in a dark cave. It's too beautiful to be like, to make it not what it is. And so it's...
But you have to go through it.
And fuck it. Yeah. Start with a gecko. Right, like start just like exactly. Not a dragon.
That's the thing, is we're seeing 5% past your comfort zone. Yeah. Don't start with a 10 feet dragon. Start with something that is, let's say, 5% within your comfort zone.
But you have those to types go. Of...
But by the way, if you take too big of a step, you're gonna fail so bad, you're gonna actually raise your, it's gonna crush your ego, raise your anxiety. So that's not the point. Yeah. Is you take that 5% and then
it's the all or nothing, and that's people go, I'm all or nothing. It's like that's what identity that's you have dangerous. To uphold, and the reason because you tell yourself that, right? So it's not just what we say, it's not how we talk to ourselves, it's also how we talk about ourselves, which is very dangerous. So it's like, oh, I'm so tired, I'm this, and you go, I shouldn't talk like that. It's like, but you also probably should be really conscious of going, oh, I'm not a runner. It's like, you're talking about yourself. That's just as important, because if you weren't a runner, then you wouldn't be here.
Because you wouldn't be talking about it, because you wouldn't be doing it in the first place. Yeah. I never tell myself that because I don't run.
Yeah, and then
so
if
I never have to tell myself I'm not a runner, I don't run, so it's all good.
Yeah, exactly right. But it's also like that conversation of going, how we define ourselves in our language tells us more about us than we actually realize. And a lot of the time we can hear it in other people, but people will try and control other people because it's easier than controlling ourselves.
Yeah, you see your flaws in them, and that makes you hate them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're trying to block something. But it's that whole part of, in the fitness industry of that, it's like having fun with it. Like, where did that go, by the way? Actually having fun with your training. When did we lose that one?
Well, I kind of just went. But from the training, it's talking about like the idea that I had to uphold a particular identity with who I was in the gym. But I think where this could go would be coaching. Like, how important is it for people to have coaches? Now, coaches to have coaches, but also...
Yeah, but like, and like, again, true coaches, the one that can talk to you.
Yeah.
So the one that can actually sit down with you, like not necessarily in the class, but like a guy that can sit with you and say, dude, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you just do that workout 3 times?
Yeah.
Where you know you're not going to get to regionals. It's never going to happen. But yet you did it 3 times. Your shoulder is wrecked. It's going to take you 2 months to recover. Like right now, you hate yourself because you're still in 1263rd. Like your shoulder is wrecked. It's going to take you 3 months. You can't play with your kid, which means you're going to hate yourself even more. Yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Like you have to be able to talk to people about it. Like, and I know it's not in the job description, and I know you don't get paid for it more and everything, but... there has to be a coach that can just sit you down and say, dude, let's talk.
Yeah. Yeah. What I learned was the more difficult conversations I had, the less difficult conversations I had.
After, yeah.
Right? Because that is a hard conversation.
It is.
It's like, am I crossing? Am I this? And it's like, well, if you mean it genuinely, it actually shows that you care. Because you can't tell someone you care. You feel that.
Yeah, you show them that you care. Yeah. They have to feel it and everything. Yeah. But it's always that moment where like, well, who am I to say it? You're the guy helping. You're genuinely trying to help. Mm. Yeah, if they haven't asked, some people will say it's none of your business. All right. But that's the, maybe not responsibility, but that's part of it. I mean, at least part of being a human being is that. It's like, dude, I can see where you're going. Maybe you can't see it, because usually we can't.
Yeah.
You need sometimes someone to say, dude, let's talk.
Yeah, and then hand the decision over to them.
Yeah, let's talk. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's me talking to you about what you're doing is not me telling you what to do mm-hmm. or not to do, or that you're wrong or whatever. It's just, can we talk about where you're going right now?
Yeah. And mentally, maybe consider this, right? But these are your options. Choose your decision.
Yeah, Red and pill, even if we pill, talk about it, at least you'll be able to, through me, to see what it is that you're doing, which you probably avoided.
Yeah.
Now you can actually see your own actions. Mm-hmm. So Dalba, I'll just be a mirror saying, look, this is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Trying to bring as little of my own biases as I can in the conversation, but I'll try to be as clear of a mirror as I can be. Of course, I have my own biases, but I'll try to be as clear of a mirror and go like, dude, this is what you're doing. Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Is that what you want your kids to do one day? Is that what you would want your friends to do? Is that, like, that's all I'm trying to be, is a mirror, so you can see what you're doing from, like, it's in another person, so you have a better understanding of what is it you're going through. Because all of what they blame themselves, they start, that whole hatred thing is not a good place to be. I feel for them, like, totally. I can tell how they're being driven into it, and I really feel, don't get me wrong, I get extremely frustrated too. So sometimes the mirror is not working every time. Like, I was at Wadapalooza, and I'm showing all the athletes to clean the sandbag, which is a different sandbag from the Rogue, so it's actually a different shape, it's a lot harder. So it's a 150-pound sandbag on Rogue. It's not the 150-pound sandbag that I have at Strong Fit. Mm-hmm. It's completely different. It's much harder to clean. So the athletes come, they try the one time, and half of them freaked out.
Right.
Because they can't do it. And they go. And so I had a woman, CrossFit game athlete, right, over 30. And she's looking at me with those big eyes where she was ready to cry. I'm like, you try one time. Can you give me 5 tries, 5 minutes for me to explain to you and everything? Mm-hmm. And she mentally completely broke down freaked out about it. That freaked me off, like, that, because I could see the anxiety. You could cut it with a knife, and that brought something inside where I was like, I can't help. Like, but so it was such a strange thing. But that's what scares me. It's like that. It's that compulsion to, you know, like, where you can feel anxiety rising up, because they can do one thing, and I'm like, guys, we need to talk about this. If we are pushing people to the point where they're gonna bowl and basically wreck themselves mentally, hit themselves at that level because they can't clean the sandbag, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Whoa. If you're pushing any human being to that stage for a competition in Miami on a Sunday where they're going to crush themselves mentally for not cleaning a sandbag, we have a problem. We have a problem.
Yeah, and the athlete has to admit that first. That's the other thing as well, in that realm, right? And that's not like responsibility.
No, I'm not going to blame CrossFit for that. That's not what I'm saying at all.
It's more on the athletes.
Yeah, exactly. But that we are creating such a compulsion that someone that has that particular weakness is going to drive themselves that bad means there's a conversation to be had on the human level.
A lot of the times, that's what is happening, is that person's whole construct, what they've built in their mind of who they are, just fell apart.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And so I would like, again, I'm not blaming CrossFit at all. What I'm saying is I would like to see.
They've got a role to play, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. Everyone does.
I mean, no, but they've done so much good. Like, you're not going to get 100%, right? Some of it is going to push certain buttons that.
Yeah.
But the point is, since we are pushing those buttons, I would like to see a community of coaches where we are capable of dealing with those particular buttons. Mm. So at least some of us can go and help that particular person with those buttons that are leading her into a very dark place. Because I seriously doubt she's going to be able to handle it by herself. I would like to know that she has a coach that can go there and help her when those buttons are being pushed. It is part of what coaches should be. We need to have those guys there, basically. Helping, coaching those athletes and everything. We need a system to allow us to become better at being that type of a coach as well. I don't think being a coach is just describing what a snatch is and describing what a food prep is and everything. We need to go past that. Yeah. Past description, we need to go into fixing.
Yeah.
So you see your doctors twice a year. You see your coaches twice a week, if not twice a day. We are the people that can influence people the most. We have more impact in people's life than most people out there.
Yeah.
I've seen it, right? So I want us to go further into that.
I think one of the biggest things that separates trainers and coaches isn't what's on their shirt. It's their ability to take responsibility.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's just like, okay, not in the sense of, like, I am responsible for every single person's results. No.
Or mistakes or stuff like that. That's not what we're
saying.
That's
not it at all. Yeah. It's responsibility of going, whilst you're in these walls, it's my responsibility to give you the opportunity to become the best person. Because otherwise, if you did it because of me, then that's a codependency. Yeah. Remove me and you fall apart. And that's not healthy.
No, and that's not healthy. That's a major problem.
Yes.
And we all done it, by the way. I've done it. And everything. Then that justifies you and it's good for your ego and everything. And you create your own set of issues.
My second business fell apart because of it. Right. And it's my business partner at the time. Like, he's like, well, these people love me. I'm their thing. And I'm like, oh, I think this is an issue, but I was too young. I was like, I don't want to offend. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
It's just a little dragon.
Let's just let it be fine. Yeah. And because I ignored it, it got stronger. Yeah. And then it fell apart. Yeah. Right.
And when he does, it's ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, right, that's exactly what I asked for. Right? That's exactly what I asked for. I wanted to become better in business. I want to become better at coaching. I want to become better at all these sorts of things. And that was my first winter.
Yep.
Good. It was a problem.
There's gonna be a few.
But
like, you have to be willing to take the hits, man.
Yeah.
But that's So yeah, exactly. You have to be willing to get those hits, and to become that kind of a coach, it's gonna be far outside of the snatching. So you're gonna lose those games. They're gonna be a bunch of winters. But it's, and again, are you willing to do your own study? Are you willing to lose your own games in order to become better at that particular kind of coaching? So again, we're going to go back to the definition of success. Is that for you what a coach should be? That's to each to answer, basically, what their job vocation entails, right? And that's a very personal conversation. But on the mentoring program, we have a lot of that, because I'm like, what is it you want? If it's just to do a snatch, then they'll never survive with me anyway. But it's... how far do you want to take it?
Yeah.
And that's, but if you, for example, if you want to ease people's suffering, then it's going to require you to know a lot more than how to snatch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you willing to go there then? Yeah. Are you willing to have those conversations with the people that will carry a lot of baggage with them? And those, man, that's a heavy weight on your shoulders when that happens.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be able to see them and not judge and absorb some of that. So not sympathize, but empathize, which is not the same. It's not about feeling sorry for them. That's not the point. Empathize is feeling what they feel, which is an entirely different conversation.
The other question.
Can you empathize and not sympathize? It's not.
Yeah. I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry with
that's
you.
That's easy. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a difference
whole
of,
different
like,
conversation.
I'm there for. No, don't be there for them. Be there
with them. Exactly. Yeah. That's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The other question is that person willing to go to their own? Right, because we talk about the for our clients, it's like, well, this is it's definitely not a role of a personal trainer. Like, go for
an
NLP course.
Again, this
or
is about as far
other things
you,
like that.
You're
right?
in this as far as you want to be,
for sure, absolutely. But do the study, right? Yeah. And that takes time, and have these conversations.
Yep.
Like, it blows my mind. I would talk to some of my friends. They're like, oh, I love having these conversations with you. I don't have them with anyone else. I'm like, you need better friends. I'm like, you got to stop talking about married at first sight. Like, for fuck's sake. Like,
Exactly. Get off. Yeah,
you only
exactly.
have X amount of time left. Yeah. Like, stop talking about
then
things.
Then you're reading the wrong
just...
books and you're talking to about the wrong things. Yeah. But those were our tribal conversations about human beings.
Yeah.
And not about the next car and shit like that. And
for
just
sure.
Like, yeah.
And you show them, like, they knock on the door, right? A metaphor. Mm-hmm. They knock on the door and you open it. And a little bit of consciousness makes us ill.
Yeah.
And the only antidote is a lot of consciousness.
Yeah, is more of it.
Yeah.
But
that's the only antidote.
But it's true. Like, it's like at first, when for the young ones out there, those first conversations will make you ill.
Yeah.
You'll feel
nauseous. You're like, what do you mean I don't matter?
Yeah.
It's like, that's why you matter.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and you're there, but even having like those conversations with for example, with a lady like you had and stuff like that, once you have that hour of true conversation and she lays down that stuff on you, you might feel nauseous at home that night. You might be sick.
Yeah.
Like, for a day, it might bring you down.
Well, you traded energies.
You did. You absorbed. Again, you were there with her, not for her, but
and
with
that
her.
Was...
And that is not always easy. That, no. You're not going to have to learn to deal with that as well.
Yeah.
Like, he'll do things to you.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. My first couple of, like, deep, wasn't aware. Yeah. I'm like, I could back up. The next day, I'm like, this is nothing.
Like, there were certain people where after those talks for an hour, I was like, I need to be on my own, not talk to anybody, and crush myself and recenter myself, because those can be hard conversations. But that's going back to a human being, at least. Okay, going back to definition of success, that's part of it, because then you touch the life.
And for example, with that client, like, I knew her for 2.5 years before that conversation happened, and it happened by chance. It wasn't a matter of going, hey,
you didn't force
you're not
it
losing
it.
Weight
yeah,
what's
exactly
going
what's
on
wrong.
It wasn't
that.
It was just like, well, what do you want to discuss today? We, you know, a couple of people didn't show up to what we had on, so is there anything you want to cover? And then off it goes. Right.
And he went into finally that, but see, 2 years to create the trust, but to have one day the opportunity to have a conversation because nobody else showed up.
Yeah.
And that's how it comes about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, we're not talking about them becoming a psychoanalyst.
Yeah, it's not something like, hey,
like,
nice to meet you.
Exactly.
So we're going to
talk
about
your diet.
Test,
put the cross right here and
so
right there.
This is where you sit on this scale. It's like.
But what I want them to know is that that's, to me, at least to me, that's the best part of the job.
Mm.
Is that 1 hour conversation finally after 2 years, because you had the opportunity and you can see that made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Not a huge difference, not you know, the size of the Eiffel Tower, but that made a difference in that person's life. Like there's a few moments like that in life that you have where you can actually, instead of going left, you're gonna go right. There's not that many. Forks in a road, there's not that many, but that's one of them.
Yeah.
And that's super important.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, data is really important, right? It's not me saying here you are on the scale and joking around that isn't saying that it's not necessary. Data is just the GPS, though. It's not the journey, and it's not the actual territory. Yeah. So, right? That's one of the biggest things around that is, like, use data, use programming,
No, of course.
But you're dealing with a human being.
Yes.
In a moment. Yes. Exactly. Yes. First. In a moment in their life. You have no idea of all of the stuff that came with it and all of the stuff that goes.
And then before and after. Of course, data, but it will always be there. We all use it and everything. People need to know they're not going to come if they're not getting stronger. It's getting some kind of accomplishment of what they do. Otherwise, why would they put the time and money into it? So all that stuff. But then we all know all this. Right? Mm-hmm. What's lacking is that. It's dealing with a human being first. That can you deal with a human being in front of you and have like true conversation and stuff like that? If you do, and I understand that at first it might not be the easiest thing for you, it might make you feel even a little bit ill and everything, because those can be very uncomfortable, but in the long run, on the human level, it's so much better. It's so much. That's to me. That's the part of what I do that I like the most, is that's the relationship. That's, we fire people from the mentoring program because I'm like, dude, if you're there just to listen to the videos and never be part of it, then why are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, there for the relationships, not for, I mean, not to have 300 coaches with a strong fit name to it. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, here for the relationship. I want to know every single person. I want to know every single person that is on the program. I want to know you, not just like, hey, dude, this is how you do a sandbag squat. Okay. I mean, it's, of course, it has its importance, but it's so much below what I want out of the relationship with people. To me, it's a human contact that I look for.
Yeah, of course.
It's that moment with that lady when she could train and you could see that thing in her eyes. That's what I do it for.
Yeah.
And the sandbag, so the sandbag squats is just a mean to get there. Mm-hmm. But that's all this is to me. Training is a mean to get there. That's all. It was never the end.
It's the vehicle.
That's all this is. If that's all you do as out of the coach is not just get people to squat from 100 kilos, 120 kilos, I have no problem with that. I'm just saying that is not my thing.
Mm.
Me, I have a different definition of success. That is yours, that is not a problem. Just know yours. Know truly what it is. And if that's all you want, that's cool.
And
know what I do.
And question it. Right?
Yeah.
Question it, because if it's true for you, it'll just come back the same. And that's okay.
Every time.
Yeah.
It'll come back the same every time. It's, you know, it's the five whys of Toyota. Like, how to know that something, how do you know how to fix a car? You have to ask the five whys.
Mm.
So this doesn't work, why? Because this happened, why? But and then like this should be the same thing as psychology.
Yeah.
Anytime you want to know why you do something, you should have five whys to get to the true reason behind it. Yeah. Most people stop at three.
Yeah. And what happens, right? People stop at the goal, right? And that's another terminology, is they go, this is my goal. And it's like, okay, why, right?
Yeah,
what's the value that you hold, that you uphold, that upholds that goal? Cool. Okay.
Yeah, I'll feel better. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Now, what's the belief that upholds the value? Because often that belief is contradictory to the goal, which means that we'll continue to run this pattern here.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, which will never get you what you talked about this in the first place.
And it could be something like, my goal is to spend more time with my family. Why? Because I really value family time. Probably because maybe they grew up without family time, right? And then what's their belief? The belief is there's not enough hours in the day. Right, that's where your core issue is.
Let's start with that.
Because it's like, well, my parents weren't around because they told me that there was never enough hours in the day. So even though I want to spend time with my family, there's never enough hours in the day. So that's what I'm going to uphold.
Yeah.
It's like,
and so I'm going to make sure there's not enough hours in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they do it, and they do it like, well, because they justify their own belief, which we do. We'll lose to a certain.
Yeah, I want to become financially independent. Why? Because I value freedom. What's your belief is that I'm always broke. Well, I can give you a system, but you'll live up to this.
Yeah, then you'll work 16 hours a day, which makes you never be independent. You'll be financially independent but never have freedom, because you're stuck in a job. Like,
absolutely.
And so but you see that training is the same, is the same way. Is we need to go back to the not the tribal system, it's not true, just to the human side of it. But yeah, like going back, I think the internet will allow us to have I think exponentially we'll get faster to it, because the internet will allow people to express those views, whereas before in books and stuff like that, it's just not the same. That you can tell, because reading a book about Tony Robbins is one thing. Seeing him doing the seminar is another.
Mm.
And now you can go online, and then when he talks to you, his charisma starts to show that he might not show during a book. So there's a tremendous power behind all this. So now you have voices given to people that would never have a chance to do it before. I think that's what the power of the internet is. We'll stop having the initial revolution form of memorization and go to our apprenticeship again.
Because then you have
people saying, please, I want to learn from you. They'll learn through your podcast and everything. It's a form of apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a different format. We're going to have to change the way we look at apprenticeship, obviously, because the world is different. But that will allow us to have that, to have the contact directly with people saying, like, no, this is how you do things.
Mm.
I think that will be tremendously more powerful this way. That's why I see the internet as the greatest revolution in mankind history, because of that.
Yeah. And that's like, and this is probably off subject, but on subject at the same time. People talk about how bad the world is. You're like,
It got better.
Yeah, I'm like, it's getting better. Like the fact that there's less people in poverty now, like then,
and we can measure that. Yeah. So we know.
Yeah, exactly. That's just one. Two,
yeah.
I flick a fucking switch and electricity turns my house on.
AC in Australia when it's 50 degrees out there.
Which means
there's less snakes
English
trying
boy.
To eat me when I come home. which is good in Australia, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, the world is better. So negative people are louder.
Yeah.
Okay, so they
talk louder. Well, they've got a microphone now.
Yeah, but so it just means that the positive people have to learn to expand themselves a bit more as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's up to us out there to say, no, the world is a good place.
Yeah, it's also like people that are negative towards negativity. It's like, do you understand that that's negative?
Yes. Too negative never made a
positive. Yeah, yeah,
yes,
that's right.
I
fucking hate negativity. It's like, that's pretty negative, man.
That's kind of like, yeah, and we have to stop also, like, with the, you know, like, everybody has to be positive all the time bullshit, and there's only good feelings in the world. I'm like, have you stepped outside?
Well,
you better learn to deal with it.
Yeah,
it's not all rainbows and
don't
sunshine.
Don't get rid of bullying. Build up resilience.
Yeah, just become stronger. Yeah, yeah. It's like the conversation where women shouldn't have to defend themselves. And like, which world do you live in? Because I had to learn to defend myself because I got beat up and bullied and everything. Like, it's a ridiculous statement. That means you have never stepped out of your own bubble.
Mm.
I lived in Africa, right in the bush, literally in a very small town in the middle of the bush. I lived in Brazil and everything. You better learn to defend yourself no matter where you are.
Yeah,
because that's on you.
Yeah, yeah. Male and
it is
female.
Not on society to male and female. This is not on society. Yeah. Society will not protect you. Like, how dare you judge evolution? Who are you to judge 300,000 years of evolution? Give me any situation out there where basically you don't have to fight for survival. That's how nature is built. That's the entire world. Who are you to judge that? You're part of it. You didn't create it. You are part of it. This is how the world works. It's how evolution got through and everything. Like, learn to deal with stuff. Don't go in your own bubble. There is positive, there is negative, but don't that idea that we all want to be in harmony, I'm like, have you looked at human beings?
Mate,
it's part of it.
If everything is good, then nothing's good.
It's complementarity in quantum mechanics. I mean, actually, it works for everything. You're not going to have both at the same time, but the world can be beautiful and terrible.
Yeah.
Not at the same time, but you can have both existing.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
That's nature.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's terrible, terrible and beautiful at the same time. Yeah. But everything is like that. Just not at the same time, but next to each other.
Yeah.
That's complementary in quantum mechanics.
Yeah, so it's the same idea. Sadness, actually. Like, you can't avoid sadness and have happiness, right?
But that's because it's not bad. Again,
no,
like,
it's
even
not.
From a physiological part, it's just you spending energy.
Yeah.
That energy has to be spent. That's just the way it is. You're going to spend it one way or another.
Yeah.
Sadness is just a way for you to spend that energy. So it feels bad because you think it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have built up a negativity to it that wasn't there in the first place. No. It's just energy expenditure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
absolutely.
It doesn't feel as good as the other one. Okay, then act more then.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, like, there's no inherently bad.
What is it telling you? Because it's telling you something, right?
Exactly.
That you need to fucking listen to. Go through it. Right? Oh, I don't cry. It's like, all right, smartass. Like, then you don't know your emotions.
Exactly. Yeah, then you're blocking one out. Where do you think it's going to end up? If you don't cry, all the energy is going to get stuck somewhere. It's going to create another problem far worse down the line.
Yeah, so it's like people that that refuse to get angry. It's like, then it comes out as passive aggressiveness, right? Because whatever you resist persists.
And you're not angry, that means you're refusing action. Guess what? Yeah. It's coming out somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Aggression is anger towards an individual. That's not necessarily good. Now, anger itself is actually staying in vulnerability, though. This is where it's powerful. Yeah. This is like, this, you know, Julian, I'm angry about this and I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get past that. And that's like, cool, now we can actually do something.
Yeah, but we're not dehumanizing. There's a fight there that needs to happen. Like you have a nervous system that's been there for a very long time. Negating the fact that we have that side, which is anger, is ridiculous. It's like all you're going to do is transform it into anxiety. Yeah. There's no fucking way. Like, so now you're going to deal with, then that's going to make you crash more.
Yeah.
And you don't end up fighting over it one way or another anyway. Yeah. You cannot deny. It's there.
Yeah.
You can't negate it.
People, like, they talk about being centered or having flow or being in balance, but that means you're being pulled even by both sides.
Yeah.
Right? Which means you're balanced because you're being pulled even by both sides. To negate one side and call it bad means you don't have either.
Yeah, you don't have the good either. Yeah. There's no way. So balance is a completely different idea. But that's it's such an important part in all of this.
It is
warm. It's in Australia. Yeah. It's a bit
welcome up, yeah. to. Well, it's not even. It's autumn.
Really?
No, it'd be too loud. Yeah. I'm sorry, my friend. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's, look, I wanted to really get you to sweat. I think it might just be the conversation.
You got that.
Yeah. It worked good. That's it. No.
Yeah.
So it's looking at that and going, if we're able to integrate as opposed to reject the parts of ourselves that we don't like, they stop controlling us.
Yes. That, and again, like you putting a good or bad on thing a lot of time is, again, an opinion, right? It's an etiquette you're putting on it. But a lot of... what kills me is that is people, so, because we're in the fitness world, right, coming to it from a place of hate. It's an etiquette you put on it. If it's a function, it cannot be good or bad. It just exists.
Mm-hmm.
It's what the body does. It's like being angry. That's a fight mode. That's a sympathetic nervous system. It's there. It's not good and bad. It's just the way when socialization fails. It's called a phylogenetic hierarchy. Socialization fails, you're going to go into fight. That's what the body does. It's neither good or bad. It's going to exist. It's going to happen every single time. You putting a bad on anger means you're going to skip that part. That energy being stored here is going to come back and fuck you.
Yeah.
It's neither good or bad. It's there. So deal with it, right? Learn to deal with it. So maybe anger doesn't mean I'm going to go punch someone.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can instead use an energy to go like, I disagree, let's stop.
Yes.
Let's fix it.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
Instead of like, okay, then it's passive aggressive, which now I hate you, but I'm not telling you. And then that creates his own set of problems. Mm-hmm. It's neither good or bad. It's there. It has a function.
Yes.
And that function will be sustained. So go through it. Learn to deal with it. And then, as you said, that way it won't control you.
Mm.
But it's neither good or bad. It's a function.
Yeah.
It exists.
The have you read the book King, Warrior, Magician, Lover?
No.
By Robert Gillett, I think it was. Yeah.
No.
It talks about the four archetypes of mature masculine, right? Oh. Two Jungian psychologists.
No, yeah. I read Jung, but not that one. I don't want to read it now. Yeah.
I'll flick it to you. So it talks about king, warrior, magician, lover. And you can think of it like king, you can think warrior, magician being your gut, and lover being your heart, right? And so the magician has to feed wisdom to the king to make all the decisions.
Yeah.
The lover must feed the compassion to the warrior to be able to use his sword empathetically. And so either one of these...
Yeah.
Archetypes, and there's other archetypes as well. These are the four ones they talk about. They have two shadows, inflated and isolated shadow. Yeah. So you have the king and the tyrant is the inflated, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you have the weakling, which is the isolated.
Yeah.
Right? And this goes into, it's really fascinating. This is the book I recommend any male to read. I think it's really fascinating. They wrote it in 92 and they talked about how we no longer have a rites of passage as men, and they were right on the money. And this is what's really fascinating. Now, the warrior energy, when in balance, is really healthy. And that's the beat of aggression. It's like, no, that's not at all. It's the ability to stand for your tribe.
It's assertiveness is not aggression.
No.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. There's, you can be assertive and not be aggressive.
100%.
You're just open and for dialogue, respectful. But doesn't mean agreeing. You can be open for dialogue.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I have to agree.
Absolutely.
I'll talk to my staff, to anyone. It doesn't mean I have to agree with you.
Yes.
Disagreement.
Even I'm agreeing.
but disagreement is not persecution.
No, that's correct. Yeah.
That is not the same. I can disagree with you without persecuting you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is not the same. That is a very ugly thing to think.
And if we aren't able to do that, then it goes to its shadow form. Inflated is sadistic.
Yes.
Isolated is masochist. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's like where it makes obvious sense. It's like, well, no, I'm not aggressive. It's like, well, you have just, that somewhere.
You were just way there. Yeah, exactly. You just found a different way. Yeah, you just found a different way. Of course you are.
Yep. Right.
And so it's a function.
I was brought up as a snag, sensitive new age guys. Well, my mom, single mom at the time, brought me up and it fucked me over because I didn't think that any anger or I thought it was all bad. I shouldn't do that.
You shouldn't ever aggressive is...
Yeah. Same thing with my mom. It came out in so many other ways and I was like...
My mother was the same way. Yeah.
Till later on.
Well, basically she was trying to tell me you should take a punch. Like if you get bullied, you should take it.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
like, in what world? Like, I mean, like, it's, yeah, in what world does that work? Yeah.
Yeah, the world needs less aggression. Okay. The world needs like less violence.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but, it works, though. I mean, yeah. But again, like, they're saying, like, the world needs less violence. Have you looked at evolution? Have you looked at nature? Because less violent, I think we're actually human, we're really good.
No, but our ideologues now make way more sense, Julian. So we should just swipe it all off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and just ignore the fact that
like evolution did not exist, and then we're going to start anew and burn the whole place down.
Yeah, because I know what's going to happen in 100 years if we do that. Less, actually. Yeah,
by the way, that's how the communists talked before the Bolshevik revolution. Mm-hmm. No, we know better. We're going to start over. I'm like, yeah, and then they burn half the world down.
Yeah, we know how it goes.
Yeah, when people start anything that's ism at the end, usually end up in a bad place. It's always something like, no, we're just going to burn everything down and start anew. I'm like, yeah, that works every time.
Yeah.
You're not the first one to try, by
the way. How many millions of people?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's been tried before, and we all end up in the same place.
Democide was the biggest killer in the 20th century. Democide is death by government.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, if you look at that, between Stalin and...
Absolutely. And so, to finish that off, so where the King Warrior Magician, the center magician is basically your gut instinct. It's an easy way to think about it in today's society. Yeah. But it's also... your ability to be wise, right? And to be able to pull on experience and understanding and knowledge and all these sorts of things. Now, here's what's really interesting, and I've seen this a lot, especially through a lot of men or male adults, I'll say. And the reason being is that the inflated magician is actually the detached manipulator, right? And then the isolated magician is the innocent denying one. Right, and so the detached manipulator is, I'm emotionally detached from you and I can manipulate you to get what I want, but they're really smart and they're really like very conniving and all that sort of stuff, right? And it's just like, that's really bad, and if we're not careful, then that's what the male will turn into in its wizard sort of space, right? Magician space, rather. And then the innocent denying one is the one that's sitting in there trolling people, being like, oh, I didn't say that. It's like, no, smartass, but you fucking insinuated and you know. Now stop eating your fucking mum's hot pockets, get out of your basement
and go do something.
Yes, exactly right. Contribute, make something worth.
Exactly,
then your lover is your detached lover, which is the isolated one, and also the effectively the mama's boy is the inflated one, right? And this is what's really, really fascinating. Now, for the women...
You can see the archetypes of men in there.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you'll enjoy this. The woman is queen, mother, wise woman, lover, right? And the fact that the mother is actually the warrior is beautiful, right? It makes a lot of sense, okay?
Yeah.
And then, of course, they have shadows of themselves as well. And this is the idea is that our rites of passage as both men and women allow us to move into being a centered human being. When I say centered, I mean mature in that realm, to be able to contribute and be able to lead the next generation to do the same. And when we have so much split, when we have so much, no, it has to be this, it just or it's not.
Yeah, because there's no... But we're going back to apprenticeship, right?
Yeah.
That's what the rite of passage was. Right? It's apprenticeship, and they're more mature men until they tell you you're ready to move forward. That was such an important part of tribal intelligence, I would say. Yeah, and we lost that. Yeah, we lost all of that.
Yep.
That's why I like martial arts so much.
Yeah.
Like jiu-jitsu, for me, saved me.
Yeah.
It's because... there was that sense of I'm going to have to learn from better than me, and not, it's not going to be 6 weeks, it's going to be years in the making, and have the time to, you know, go through the lesson and learn to
submit. I started doing Thai kickboxing when I was 19. I had one fight when I was 23, and then I've gone back to it recently, 25 kilograms heavier. But it's like, oh, your kicks are still as powerful. I'm like, yeah, because I'm heavier. But what, when I first started that, and I definitely didn't have the same direction. Now, my father's a good man. He lived in Sydney, though. He lived away, so he was on the phone.
Yeah.
But looking back, I'm like, oh, I see so many shades in my psychology that would turn into a shadow. But I went in there, and I learned that after a while, if I was... And I'm not a big guy. A small, angry person out in town is not a good thing for me. Not for anyone else, it's fine, because I'm done.
Yeah.
But in that circumstance, I remember someone bumping into me. And I'm so thankful for this, because I turned around, I'm like, this person has no idea what I know. And then I went, and I have no idea what they know. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
You okay? Would you like a drink?
And
what is it?
Yeah, and anger is not enough to make you win.
No.
That's what I learned. Right.
No, neither is ego.
Every guy out there thinks anger and ego is enough to make them win a fight. I got news for you, it isn't.
Yeah. That's the whole idea of, like, what are you proving, really? You're proving it's false masculinity, and that really is. It's like, no, I'm going to try and get my rites of passage by beating people up.
Yeah, and you know what you discover when you have a street fight, that even when you win the next day, you're fucked up. Like, I had one, a guy jumped me in the middle. I was 19 in Paris. He jumped me and everything, and he was smaller than me, and I I knew enough, so he ended up getting whooped. I wake up the next day with a black eye and a sprained thumb that hurt for 4 years straight. Mm. That's when I realized, that's me winning. Fuck, man, losing must suck. Man. Mm. And that's when I was like, I'm never having another street fight ever again in my life.
No.
That was me winning. Just imagine losing. So I was like, none of this works, man.
No.
But that, in a way, it was good because then he showed me what he was. But that's not having those rights of package. So imagine that's one man, I'm 19. If you don't have that fight, imagine if you're 30, mature and everything, and still having no clue, still thinking you need to be a man by beating up people. That's a very dark place to be in, and that leads to bad accidents. This is when real shit happens.
It turns into
You need to make those mistakes when you're 18.
I wrote my car off when DUI when I was 17, so driving under the influence, and it was one of the best mistakes I ever did.
That's why it's so important. We need to make those mistakes at 17, 18. That's why, like, you see in the States, like, why you can't do shit as a kid, like, anytime you do something, you end up in jail and like for 6 months and everything. I'm like, you guys are just making sure those people are going to be passive aggressively fucked up for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
Like, where they're going to do crazy shit, they're just going to learn to hide it better.
Yeah, the other thing is that you get fed in jail. Like, you get housed. Yeah. I'm not saying it's good. I don't want to go there. What I'm getting at is that when you come back out, there's also another realm of that. And I don't know because I've never done it.
Yeah.
But there's another realm of, like, there is street credibility behind the person that's gone away in different areas. And I don't know
places,
a whole lot
about
this, but I've known enough to be able to say that that's also not feeding the right thing. And so,
yeah, no, it's a humongous thing. But, like, we need to have, like, I know how much of a punk I was at 18. Thank God I made those mistakes because I learned it wasn't a good thing.
No.
Like, I can only imagine if I carried that in my 30s. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, thank God. Because I made every single mistake you can make. Outside of, I mean, in the States, I probably would have been in jail. I never did anything illegal, but I made so many stupid shit that I probably would end up in jail in the States.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God. Thank God I didn't carry that later. Like, that's why I feel for those, like, 16, 18, even, like, in a training world, you know, where they're also 18-year-old, that, of course, you know everything because you're 18, right? And they start to try to max out every day. I'm like, yo, go ahead.
Mm.
Like, I've done it too. I know. I feel for you, man. I was that stupid. I totally get it. Go make the mistake. Just know that I'm here. Whenever you're down hurting yourself and fucking up every 2 weeks, I'm here to help you.
Yeah. But I mean, that's them testing it, right? Like, that's which is
men need
reason
to make mistakes.
Yeah,
this is one thing I've done at the seminar in workouts. Is I'll explain to women how to do workouts before the workout. I'll explain men how to do the workouts after the workout once they fucked it up, because then they're willing to listen to me.
Mm.
That's just the way men are. We need to make the mistakes first to be explained, not to make them, you know, after. Women, it's before. Men, it's after. That's one of those facts of life that I've seen. Wait for men to make mistakes to explain to them they made one.
Mm.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
We need those. So the 16 to 18 year old, they need to fuck up.
Yeah, absolutely.
They need to make those mistakes. They just need, again, rite of passage. You need more mature people after that saying, like, whatever you don't fucking up, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
We need that as men. Right?
Absolutely.
And it's not easy to find. Though.
Yeah, 100%. And, like, that's the idea of, like, mentors and all that sort of stuff. People are like, oh, you know, I don't think I should. It's like, fuck, like, I am so fortunate that I have a group of older men around me. And, like, women have played a role in that as well, but my mom couldn't raise a man. So women can't raise men. They can raise young boys.
But there's always that moment, yeah.
And it's the same thing around. Now, people can argue that. I'm like, sure, but what we're talking about, and read something like King Warrior, and you will get more of an understanding of that. It's just like, no, we need really mature, good men.
Mature,
right?
Is the key too.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy to handle an 18-year-old. So you have to be a mature man to be able to help a kid like that.
Yeah.
I remember the way I was.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I'm like, well, okay. So I'm better at conversations because I was bad at conversations, right? Yeah. I'm better at making decisions about my own training because I've been bad at making decisions in my own training.
Oh, that's why I know. Yeah. I fucked up every single thing you can fuck up in training.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's why, like, I can talk to most coaches because I'm like, my client did that. I was like, yeah, did that one as well.
Yeah.
No, it's very necessary, but I was lucky with martial arts because that gave me a pool of more mature men that have been going through jiu-jitsu that have learned life through the mistakes of, you know, if they don't injure jiu-jitsu, tapping 3,000 times will teach you to put your ego aside and all that stuff. Jiu-jitsu, the best thing that happened to me because of that, because it gave me that tribe where you've learned, because when you tap, that means you submit, you lost. It was a clear cut, like, I lost. He tapped, he choked me out, I lost, done.
Yeah.
That was wrong. Okay, let's move on to the next one. And I had because you have so many black belts helping you. I have so many good guys, so many good teachers going like, this is not what jiu-jitsu is, stop fighting.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
learn
yeah.
the flow and everything. And they taught me life, basically, through jiu-jitsu. Yeah. That was the best thing ever for me. Because like that's how they taught me life. Me was so jiu-jitsu, because I didn't have a father around. So jiu-jitsu basically took that role. And I started, I was 18, 19, where I knew every single thing there was to know in life.
Yeah.
And so that was the greatest, that's what saved me, jiu-jitsu, because he gave me that.
Hmm.
He gave me more mature.
Well, that's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Right? Here's how you get to the next step. Here's how you get
and
to
then
the
you
next
get a belt,
step.
By the way.
Here's how you
and
get
you
to
get
the next
that thing
step.
And everybody's there and you're uploading and you get the belt. And I was like, ooh, so I belong to the next group and the next group and the next group until you get to brown and black and you go, oh. And then, of course, by then you know.
Yeah.
But then you're ready to help the next
and people that are at the blue belt know more than people at the black belt, right?
Always.
Yeah.
At white, blue, I knew everything there was, man.
Yeah.
Every single fight. Yeah. Like, and I got my ass whooped, didn't change though.
Yeah.
Next day, still know everything. Yeah. To climb. 2.5 years, I think, for me to go like, oh, that's what he meant. Yes, that's what
yeah,
he meant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But thank God for those guys.
Mm.
I had two great teachers, thank God for them.
Yeah.
Because they're the one that really showed me what life is through jiu-jitsu. That was such a thing.
Mm.
But that's why, like, it's... Go to jiu-jitsu because it's hard for men to find. Where do you, like, I feel again, like, if you're 18 right now, where do you go? With social media bullshitting you left and right or where a man should be, where do you go?
Well,
if you don't have a man at home like that.
One of the issues is that there's more girls at nightclubs and it's easy to get in.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the issues.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate that I went into Thai as well. Like, I played a lot of sport growing up and I had decent men around, but what I'm getting at is that, like, it was like, no, you're there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that about he or she is younger or older and she's, doesn't matter. It's, you're there.
That's
stand.
Cool. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And it's just like, oh, I have to be disciplined.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do I want this? Right? Why am I seeking this?
Yeah, because you go home, you're beat up, you're almost crying because you get, you're like this, and I'm like, and I'm going to go back tomorrow. Why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know the story about...
You learn so much about yourself.
Oh, it's fucking great. Nate Diaz.
Yep.
You when he first started doing jiu-jitsu?
No.
Apparently, I'm pretty certain of this story, right?
Yeah.
Someone might fact check me, but what happened is that he actually didn't want to do it, him and his brother, but they had no fucking food. But the guys that trained said, look, if you come in training, I'll buy a burrito, right? Or a kebab or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't want to go to training. I'm fucking over it. He's like, but I want to eat. He's like, oh. And then next thing he had a blue belt. And that's what he says. He's like, I didn't want to go, but I got a chance to eat. So I went, and the next thing I got a blue belt, and then here I am. And it's just like, jiu-jitsu is eating. Like, discipline is, Jocko Willink would say, is that, and I'm going to tell you something in a minute I think you really like, but Jocko Willink would say that discipline equals freedom. Right now he did a podcast with, and the reason why that is, discipline equals freedom in the sense of, like, if you're disciplined with your time, then you're free with your time. If you're disciplined with your money, then you have freedom.
Yeah.
If you're disciplined with your food, then you have freedom. And so he did a podcast with Jordan Peterson, and on that Jordan said something that I think I'll never forget, which is, a harmless man is not a good man. A good man is a very, very dangerous man that has it under voluntary control. And this is, like, what's worse for society? A harmless man without morals or a dangerous man with them?
Yes,
and you're like, the first one doesn't exist.
Yeah. On top of it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I would agree completely with this. Yeah, but I mean, we're going, that's almost the concept of religion, right?
Mm.
If you say you have morals because there's a guy hanging over your head waiting to punish you when you don't do when you do something bad, does not make you a moral person. Versus an atheist who does it because he believes the right thing, who's the most moral person of the two?
Mm.
Technically. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like it. That's a good quote, though. I'll have to watch that podcast.
I'll flick you a couple of things.
Yeah. There's a bunch of talks you have to flick to me.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So, mate, I think that's
That was a good one.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Always.
Now, you said you want a girly drink.
I do want to go with cider.
You want to cider?
Yeah, I'll take cider.
Easy. That's hot, is it?
It is hot.
And I'll stop this.
Clap.